Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Guy Rowe and Max Cohen from Cottagers Confidential. This episode will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Barnsley at Craven Cottage. On top of that, we have some interesting topics to discuss in the Cottage Talk roundtable to start the show. We have much to get through, but before we do anything, I have to welcome one of my co-hosts. It's been a little while since I've actually had you on the show. Guy, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Obviously, we've tried to get me on a few things, but from my away days from Villa and
That's
Sunderland,
right.
But it hasn't worked out for one reason or another. It's good to be back. Good to be sitting on my bed and not in a coach full of people. I love our fans, but both of the times it was after we lost, so it wasn't very positive. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back on, Guy. We tried twice, and unfortunately, we just had bad audio. But what's great is that I can do this show with you and also with Max, who's actually in London for this upcoming match. Max, how you doing?
Yeah, Ross, I'm delighted to be back in London. Cannot wait for the match tomorrow against Barnsley, and then I'm going to be at the Boxing Day fixture away at Cardiff. So,
wow.
Great time of the year. I love the festive fixtures, and just love seeing Fulham in the flesh. And I'm buzzing for the two matches coming up.
Okay, excellent. Well, guys, we have a good amount to discuss in this show, and I have a bonus topic that I'll be sharing with you guys in a little bit that deals with some speculation that I was told earlier today. But before we do that, let's start here. Let's talk about Slavisa. Two sites actually did some polls on Slavisa. So let's talk about the results of the Hamian poll and then also the FulhamFocus.com poll. Let's start with the one on Hamiend. It was actually the Slavin campaign, and the results are sack him was at 19%, keep him was at 81%, and this was from 688 people voted in this poll. And there's an article by Lydia Campbell, who was recently on the show, is entitled Slavin Campaign Are the Silent Majority. I would highly recommend you reading it. Lydia goes through the reasons why she feels that the results can change if these things change. Go through it. Lydia makes a great argument of how our results could get better if certain things were done. So check that out. But I thought we would start with talking about the results. Before I talk about the FulhamFocus.com results, I wanted to start with these results. Over to you, Guy. Your thoughts on this, because, again, this is huge talk amongst Fulham supporters for a while now. Listen, when the team doesn't win and the team is underachieving, you're going to hear about talk in regards to sacking the head coach, sacking Slavisa. What are your thoughts about this poll being so in favor of keeping Slavisa?
I'm glad it's not like an overwhelming majority that want his head, because we all know what he's capable of. We all know what he can achieve, what he has achieved. He did it with Watford. He took us to the playoffs last year. And we have most of the same players from last year. It's just how the performances have been drastically different in comparison. He keeps on saying about finding a solution. Do I believe he can find a solution? I don't know yet, but I surely don't want him gone, because I'm not sure if there's many other people who are capable of achieving what he can achieve with us.
Okay, excellent there. And listen, I'm there with you, and I made a strong argument why I'm against sacking Slavisa, and I think that he should be with Fulham until the end of the season, and then you can assess at that point, unless Fulham got into a relegation battle, which I don't think is going to happen. So I'm one of this majority that believes you should see this through with Slavisa. And Max, before I go to you, I'm just going to share the results of this other poll, which is on FulhamFocus.com. It was, should Jokanović stay or go? And would you sack Jokanović? So it's a different look at it. Yes, was it 25%, but no, was it 74%? So that goes along with the majority being basically keeping Slavisa. And this is out of 367 votes. So the majority in both polls come to the same conclusion, to keep Slavisa, in decent margins in both polls there. So what are your thoughts about all this?
Yeah, you know, with all these kind of managerial decisions, it's always going to be easier for, I feel, opponents to come out and speak against the manager after a poor result. It's always going to be easier for people who say, sack him, that kind of knee-jerk reaction. That's going to be the loudest voice heard. But the voices that aren't going to be heard as much, I think, are the more reasonable voices, like you, Russ, and I think most people who've come on College Talk, saying that it's really not the right decision to make this hasty and really, not, in my opinion, wrong decision for Zach Slavisa after a run of fixtures that are, sure, poor, but in the long run would be the wrong choice. So it's obviously clear, and these are really wide margins that you cited in these polls. Yep. And obviously these aren't the full support, but it's clear that the majority of people on social media and who are participating in these polls want to keep Slavisa. And it's sometimes easy to get carried away when you see all these kind of angry tweets saying Slavisa out. It's clear he's had his time at the club. It's time for him to move on. I have no more confidence in him. But those voices are always going to rise to the top. And these polls just show what I think a lot of Fulham fans believe, is that Slavisa is the right man for the job. And with every manager, there's going to be good times and bad times. And right now, it's going through a bit of a downturn in form. But I think the vast majority of the Fulham support remember what Slavisa did for us. And remember the state he was in. I think it was just around 2 years ago when he came into the club, when we were really in free fall after sacking Kit, and we didn't have a manager for around 2 months, and how he took us from that really low point to the brilliant highs of last season, making the playoffs, and we know what he's capable of.
Right. I'm there with you, Max, and that's why I wanted to talk about that. And Guy, back over to you, because along with talking about this, you said something that that resonated with me when you're talking about, do you know if he can fix the issues? And one thing that is fair, it's fair to question, can he fix the issues? But here's the thing. I think it's fair to question some of the decisions that he's made without saying sack the head coach. And you just went to a match. I was questioning on the post-match show the decisions before the match to play certain players. You know, you look at it and you think to yourself, why does he make the decisions? And we have a right to question it. I have a right to question, why is he playing Stefan Johansson in the role that he's playing? Why didn't he play Dennis Odoi? But it doesn't mean, because I disagree with some of these decisions and they end up losing, that I think that they should sack him, Guy. What are your thoughts about that? Because I think part of what we do here is we question the decisions, but I think to take it to the extreme of sacking him after we've seen a good amount of positive results from last season, I think it's just not right.
Well, first off, question to you, Ross. Do you see any of this negativity after a match week loss, but not straight after the game, like during the week when it's not a match day, like when it's not in the heat of the moment?
The majority of it is in the heat of the moment, what I see, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, that's what I think a lot of it is. Obviously, it's bad. It's bad. It's a bad run of form. It's hard to watch, especially when you're the one team that Sunderland beat when they haven't won at home for a year. It's like that. I went mental on my Snapchat walking out the Stadium of Light. I went mental on my Snapchat. It's like they haven't won a home game for 364 days, but nope, as soon as they play Fulham, here's a win for you. And I said it countless times. I compared it to Birmingham last year. They hadn't won.
It's a great comparison, by the way. It's the same thing.
And oh, wait, with Zola's first win. Great. And a red card on top of that. But I don't think many... Well, again, we've established the majority are Slavisa in, or are at least in favour of Slavisa. They don't want his head. I don't see a lot of people calling for Slavisa's head on non-match days. I don't see people arguing that he should be sacked when tensions aren't already high. You know, when we've lost and when it's a bad performance, when there's so much negativity to look at, it's easy to get wrapped up in the feelings and in the heat of the moment. But personally, you know, I want him to stay, whether or not he can fix the issues. Again, I don't know. That remains to be seen. I compared it to, well, just thinking about it before we went on air, I compared it to Arsene Wenger. Is it naivety? Is it stubbornness? I don't know. But again, whether or not he can fix the issues, we'll have to see, you know.
Yeah, it's a very interesting situation. We're going to have to wait and see on that. But guys, I have another bonus topic that I wanted to discuss with you. While you were talking, Guy, I pulled up an article from Ryan O'Donovan on Get West London. It is entitled "Phone Boss Discusses Using Stefan Johansson in the False Nine Position Ahead of Barnsley." And since we're talking about decisions, I thought this would be a great time to talk about one and get your thoughts on his reasoning why he's doing this. And then we could talk about it and see if you agree or disagree with why he has decided to have Stefan Johansson in this role. So I'm going to read directly from this article, and then the two of you can share your thoughts on it. And again, this is right from the article on Get West London from Ryan O'Donovan. And here it is. Slavisa Jokanović has explained his decision to use Stefan Johansson as a false nine, insisting it allows the two wide players to attack the space the Norwegian creates. Since Floyd Aiki's injury at Sheffield United, the head coach has employed the 26-year-old at the top of a midfield diamond, flanked by two offensive players, something that has not gone down well with some sections of the Craven Cottage support. Fulham are finding goals hard to come by at the moment, and the move to play Johansson in the false nine position came as a result of finding a solution to that problem. Although the defeat at Sunderland proved fruitless in terms of goals once again, Jokanović was quick to defend using Johansson in the position, stating he had the most shots on the pitch. Here are quotes from Slavisa. Quote, "I play with Johansson like the top of the diamond and play with two more offensive players, and I play with players who can attack the space and try to use the Stefan-like players who can give us option to collaborate. In the past, we had some wide players who can play in the gaps. Now our wide players try play and use the space. This is the decision that I take dependent on the different situation. Johansson at the top of the diamond or fake striker. He had more shots in the last game against Sunderland than any player in my team, and he makes some offensive jobs for himself. Barnsley game is a different game. We didn't expect we will find so many space behind defensive line, and we don't expect we can attack space behind the center back like where I am talking about in the Sunderland game. This game, Barnsley play a little different, and there exists a possibility that we can find some space behind the center backs and try attack. At the end, we're thinking about what is best option for us for a game in front of us, and we're going to try, like always, to find the best solution for the team." All right, guys, since I just brought this up, and then Max, I'll go right to you. What are your thoughts about his reasoning behind going with Johansson in this role?
My instant comparison is to Lionel Messi. But obviously, it's a whole other ball game with Stefan Johansson and Lionel right. Messi. With Johansson, you know, he's got a point. He had the most shots out of the team. It's just the cutting edge. If you want to talk about did he put the ball in the net or not? Our players on the wings, after Aiete's injury. Yeah, Johansson in the false nine, and then Cabano got injured against Birmingham.
Right.
So that's a spanner in the works to that as well. And who was it? It was Ojo and Font on the weekend against Sunderland. Yeah. And then there's points where I couldn't even tell where Font was playing. I couldn't tell if he was on the wing or if he was up front, all of that type of stuff. I still think it's in the testing phase, if anything. I'm not gonna knock it because I haven't seen it work well yet. Or you know, I can see the potential for what he's doing, but I haven't seen it the full effect of it. I'll start to like it when I see your hand
if it works
a bit more. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'll start to like it if it works. I'm not going to knock it now because there's so many different factors to go into it. Sure. I want to see, like, Aiete's back for tomorrow, isn't he?
Potentially, yes.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, I want to see all these different options we can have on the wings. I want to see Aiete and Cabano, Ojo and Aiete, all of that type of stuff. And Johansson in a false nine because they all play similarly, but you know, their individual talents can do good things in a game. You know, Aiete can beat a man like Aluko could last year, you know?
Right.
I'm not going to knock it at this point, mainly because I still think Slav's testing it out. And he talks about finding a solution. Maybe this is it. But again, it's still early days in regards to testing out a formation.
Right. It's something that they're using and trying to see if it becomes the solution, like you're saying, Max. Maybe it does need more time. I'm sorry, Guy. I called you Max. There you go. There's a Goldman for you. Max, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on this because Guy brought up some very good points about this. And I almost forgot when I was talking about questioning the manager, I was questioning the move to play Font wide again, which I think is a waste. That's just my opinion. I think that's an obvious place to question the head coach. But I want to get your thoughts on his reasoning behind playing this false nine with Stefan Johansson.
Yeah, just my initial thought is this shows what an utter lack of confidence Lavisa has in the strikers. And that's such a sad fact to state, considering
we spent
excess of £10 million on those two strikers.
Yeah.
We go out and buy Ruiz Font for $9 million. I think Kamara was $5 million. That was our summer. That was the major business we done over the summer. And everyone agreed, after Chris Martin left, we need a new striker. And in fact, we got two. And to be in this point, in late December, we were playing a false nine with Stefan Johansson, he's not a striker. You know, he's not a good finisher, as we saw, as I think we've seen in the Sunderland match. Maybe that's a bit harsh on him, but if you want someone to lead the line in the championship in this unforgiving league, you have to have someone that can put away the ball in the back of the net. And if you can't trust your two strikers, this is the situation we're left in. That's really worrying for me. That it's so clear, it's Lavisa. In this whole conversation, in the article you cited, there's not one mention of the strikers we bought. There's not one mention of Kamara or Font.
No.
And that's good point. That's just unbelievable for me as a supporter to think of that. And I think that's why I think fans really think it's clear to get another striker in January. Even though we've already bought two of them in the summer, it's clear Slavisa just doesn't rate them. And for me, that's kind of evident of a bigger issue, that he's not having enough say in the transfers. Because if he had a say in those two transfers, then why aren't they playing? Well, obviously, he wouldn't buy players he doesn't rate. So maybe that's the statistical model coming in and saying they're good, and Slavisa saying, well, they're not. It's just unclear. But, I mean, come on. You can't go out in the summer and buy two strikers and then play Johansson as a false nine. This system isn't working.
That's a great point. Guy, back over to you. I like where Max went on this. He actually diagnosed what might be going on here. If you read between the lines, is this Slavisa telling all of us that he just doesn't rate the two strikers, that this is why he's going in this direction?
Potentially. Like last year, he was, I don't want to say not sabotaging the team, but he was definitely, at least in post-match interviews, in a way, showing all these holes in the team and showing all the team's weaknesses. And it's potentially a way that he's doing it again, like as a message to the people upstairs to sort it out, essentially. And the one point that's been brought up again and again and again, at least on the coach when we're traveling up and down the country, is Slav should hopefully have more of a say in January. Klein
I
is
hope so.
Gone.
I hope so.
You know, and hope pray to God Slav gets a say, because if he has at least some more input into the transfers we make, if this two boxes tick system is finally gone, then he can at least try to get the players he wants. You know, we were linked with Cameron Jerome. I don't know, was it his age that stopped him? Andreas Pereira. I know we could have had him from Man United on loan, but the two boxes ticked. Oh no. So many players. Apparently we had a deal for Lewis Dunk ready and waiting, but nope, the two boxes ticked, didn't even work. It's annoying to read into, but there's definitely potential, like, to read between the lines and see Slav's intentions. I brought it up time and time again as well, and what Max is saying, for us to be coming to the end of the year, and how many goals has Kamara scored? Two or three? Ruiz Font has scored one.
Correct.
And I won't slate these players because they're clearly not being played to the best of their abilities.
Right.
Like Rui Font, I don't know where his best position is. I feel like he's naturally a striker, but he's being played on the wing. All of that stuff. It's just like...
It's a waste, guy. It's a waste.
Yeah. Kamara, if Font is going to play as a striker, and if you want them on the same team, like in the same starting 11, you've got to change the formation. Do I think Slav will change the formation? I don't think he'll change it anytime soon, at least not to a formation that plays two up front.
Yeah.
But it's the same premise. Like, if you want to play Kamara and Font, you got to play one of them on the wing in this current formation, at least. Right. I feel like they'd both be wasted on the wing. And we're seeing it with Font. He's not being played to the best of his ability. And
right.
his stats are poor from that. He's had, I want to say he's had one good game, Ipswich away. But he did well against Birmingham off the bench. You know, you got a glimpse of what he could do. Again, at Sunderland, I couldn't tell where he was playing. And because of that, I couldn't tell how well he was doing. I don't even think he was getting the service then anyway. It's like, they're not being played to the best of their ability. Whether or not that changes, I don't know. We need his strikers. We need his strikers. We spent 10, 15 million. We spent, I think, £8 million, €10 million on Font. For that price, you want instant results. Maybe not instant. Okay, it takes time to acclimatize the new league, all of that. But you don't want one goal by the end of the year. You know, you want someone who's going to make a somewhat decent impact before you can bring in some more players. And Kamara, he's not a bench warmer nowadays, but he's just not in the team very much. Like he'd come off the bench, but he won't do much. Or I don't know. It's just like he's there.
Right. Listen, it's an interesting situation. That's why I brought it up to you, Guy. You know, I asked the question, do you think that is this an indication that he doesn't rate these two strikers? I want to go back off that and say, I think he rates them as players. I just don't think he sees them as the players that he can count on to score the goals that he needs. And that's why I think he's changing things up. I think he's trying to find roles for them. I think he values what they potentially can offer for him, but in the regards of being that goal scorer, I don't think that he can depend on them. That's why I think he is mixing and matching and changing the way he's doing things. And that's why you're seeing, I think, Johansson in the role. I think that he does like these two players. I just think that he's trying to figure out how to best use them, use their skill set. And in the situation with Rui Font, we've already talked about it. I just think it's an utter waste to put him out there on the wing. I think that you're not getting the most out of him. And I think that's part of the conundrum. And like I mentioned, we're going to be talking about a little speculation in a bit, because I think it's very obvious that they need a striker to play ultimately the way Slavica wants them to play, like they did last season. They had someone that was a goal scorer striker, and I think they need one again. But we'll talk about that in just a bit. Guy, I'm going to go back to you because I thought of you right away with this topic. I want to talk about the fact that Fulham, for the fifth season in a row, are going to be away on Boxing Day. And what makes this worse is that not only are they going to Cardiff, they're going to Cardiff, then they're following that up by going to Hull City, which I think is just crazy. To have these two matches back-to-back away, what is the league thinking when they're scheduling these two matches back-to-back? I think it's disgusting. I feel bad for the Fulham supporters that are going to be making this trek. I give them all the credit for doing that because they support the team. But 5 years in a row, it's just not right, Guy.
No. I've been going away more or less since we came down. That's mainly because of my age and me being allowed to do it on my own. I went to Ipswich on Boxing Day last year. It wasn't the worst trip in the world, and we won, so
that was
a great
result.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite away days last year. But the fact that this has gone on 5 years in a row, even when I haven't been traveling, just to look at it on face value, is just a piss take.
Yeah.
And I'm looking back at our festive season last year. We had Ipswich away, then Reading away. And that one, and the Reading game, we all know what happened there with the fog.
Yep.
Brighton at home, then Cardiff away in the FA Cup in early January. Nice. I personally don't mind the travelling. It is what it is. But for the fact of it being 5 years in a row, I mean, give us a break for fuck's sake, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, one thing I'd say is that I've actually, considering once I moved back to the States, is that the only time I come over now is during the festive period. So I've been to the past 4 Boxing Days away. And in the championship, there's been, so last season was Ipswich, that was a great 2-0 away win.
Yeah.
But before that, we've played really difficult fixtures. The season before that was Derby away, really tough side, we lost that one. The season before that was Bournemouth when they ran away with
them. Oh, I remember that.
We lost that one too. Yeah. And then the one in the season we got relegated in the Premier League, Norwich City away. And that was probably one of my favorite Fulham away days with the last minute Scotty Parker winner.
I remember that, yep.
Listen, I can understand, of course, the fact that we've made to be play away for 5 years in a row is because Chelsea's playing at home.
That's
and
right.
In terms of that, we're being placed below Chelsea, that's what gets me really angry. That's disgusting. I mean, I think that's a disgrace.
I think that's more than TV.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think
exactly.
That's why.
It's for the telly.
I think that's why.
It,
and again, I know you're going to make your
Sky
argument
Sports
here, but I
would rather be at Stamford Bridge than any other Premier League ground on Boxing Day.
Max, my point in all of this is that we have a good idea of the reason behind it, and that's what upsets me that again, you're talking about going away, how much you enjoyed it, and I understand that, and I think it's great. You talk about the last season, you know, going to Ipswich Town. I just think for principle's sake, it's just wrong.
I agree. Yeah, of course. And that gets me angry. But that being said, I know in the away days, in terms of the matches I've listed, they're not close. They're not London derbies. You got it. Those are pretty long journeys that are going to take substantial expenditure from fans. That is really, it's during the holiday season, that's not right to make people kind of pay that money just to support their team. Of course, we're going to do it because we love our club and we'll do this happily. But for 5 years in a row, that is not right.
Right.
But that being said, some of my favorite memories as a Fulham supporter, and I think Guy and many other supporters listening will agree with me, have been away days. Because away days, yeah, you get a special atmosphere,
amen,
camaraderie, and being in the away end, it's special. But you got to play. You got to have some home matches, especially during Boxing Day when people want to
visit
their families. You know, you
exactly.
Don't want to have to be traveling. I'm going to Cardiff on Boxing Day this year. Listen, Wales, you don't want to go to Cardiff unless you're forced to go to Cardiff. But, you know, we'll see.
Okay. But listen, you bring up a good point because I love the fact that, Guy, that you go to all these away days. And I think it's fantastic. And you enjoy it. Max, you enjoy it too. I think that's great. And I'm glad that you guys are talking glowingly about going to these away matches because I love the fact that Fulham supporters are passionate about going away and we should be promoting that. Absolutely. I just, for me, this is about principle, that the fact that this is 5 years in a row and it's just not right. We have a very good idea of the reason why it's been 5 years. And that to me is enough. Enough of this. Stop it. If it's next year, I'm going to be screaming my head off on this show if it happens again. Because we have a good idea that this is all about Chelsea. And enough of that. Enough of that. There are other teams around them. Enough of that. You know, that's my point on all that, guys. All right. I did mention that we would talk a little speculation. And Max, I'm going to start with you. Listen, I think all three of us are in agreement. Fulham need a striker. Well, I actually got a message from a source today that talked about Fulham being linked to a striker that we know. And along with two other teams. And again, this information I also saw on social media a few weeks back, but this source of mine has confirmed that this source heard from another source that says this is what they're hearing. They're hearing that Fulham are linked to Chris Martin of Derby County, along with Leeds United and Wolves, for a £6 million deal for Chris Martin in January. So I wanted to bring this up. I know it's already been out there. Like I said, it's been out there for a few weeks, but I just heard from a source just confirming it again today. So, Max, your thoughts on this? If you're asking me, if that's the price tag, go get Chris Martin back and bring him back to Craven Cottage. And I know of the history of how it went down last year, but for what he can offer, if he's willing to play at the level that he can play at, I say you go get him.
Yeah, without a doubt, agree with you on that. We got a reminder of what Chris Martin can do. The Fulham social media accounts, the official account, has been circulating videos of Scott Malone's goal last season against Barnsley at home. And, of course, in that goal is an example. Of course, it's a brilliant finish by Malone. But what really stands out to me is the superb hold-up play by Chris Martin.
Exactly. We're missing that, by many fans.
Yeah, we're missing. And completely agree. We're missing that hold-up play. We're missing, most of all, a striker who knows the championship. The one thing I was going to say about Kamara and Font is that, listen, I'm sure they have great potential, and they do. But if you want to get promoted, you cannot depend on people, strikers, coming in for the first experience in England. It's always
Font
been so
struggled
difficult,
with
right?
Crystal Palace as well.
Yeah, exactly. And what you have to say is Chris Martin coming back, a striker who he knows what to do at Fulham. He's been there before. Of course, he had his strike, but I think that's firmly in the past. He'll come here. If he's going to come on a permanent move, we won't have to worry about Darby and Steve McClaren trying to get him back. Both of those factors are off the table now, thank God. Right. And he'll be firmly focused on Fulham. He knows what to do. He can score goals in the championship. That's proven. And I think he would be a great acquisition for Fulham in January.
Listen, when I heard about this morning, I was going back and forth. Should we talk about it on the show? And I had seen this. Like, it's on Twitter. You can actually search for this. And there's been talk about this for the last 2 weeks. But when I have someone actually message me and back that up, then I'm thinking, okay, maybe there's something to this. And then I think it's worth talking about because I see the void that he has left Fulham guy. Max just brought up the hold-up play. We don't have anyone that can do that. He knows the championship. The price tag, if that is the price tag guy, I don't think it's that terrible. For the amount of money that we've paid for Rui Font and also paid for Kamara, that to me is actually a better deal for Fulham. £6 million for Chris Martin, I'll take that because he offers something that we desperately need. And we know that he's a goal scorer. So I understand the history with him, but I would take him back in a second. That's just me. How about you?
I don't know about taking him back in a second based on how he's been this year.
No, I
know. Mean,
right.
Yeah, but no, based on what he can offer, hell yeah. For the price we're paying, considering we had him on loan last year and the option to buy would have been for £9 million, we're getting a cheaper deal just a year and a half later or something. You know, it's not that bad. It's not something I would be mad at. You know, I've said it on off air countless times. I'm not sure if I trust the people upstairs to spend the money effectively.
I understand
them spending it. It's how they spend it that pisses me off.
I totally agree.
If they were going to splash out $6 million on Chris Martin, I would be happy with that signing.
Okay.
Based just generally based on what he did for us last year, what we know he can offer us, how he knows the league, and yeah, I would be happy with that. It's just yeah.
Listen, let me clarify what I meant by taking him back in a second because I understand all the negativity and I was ripping him for the way he acted at Fulham with the whole Derby County thing. I'm not forgetting any of that. I'm just talking about what he offers, the skill that he could offer, that he could walk in and be able to fix an issue that we're having. That's what I meant. Not the person. I'm talking about the skill. Does that make sense, guy?
Yeah,
I want to clarify
that. I wasn't faulting you for that either. I was just saying for what he offers, he hasn't hit the highs he hit last year with us, with Derby this year.
No.
From what I've seen, at least. So it's nothing based on what he did last year with us. It's nothing based on his strike. It's more his stats for the season, if anything, for me. But then again, if he's going to come into a team like ours, if he's going to hold up that play, if he's going to play how he did last season, which with most of the players who are the same players from last season,
yep.
Hey, if it works again, it works again. If he can start scoring, Hell yeah, bring him in.
Okay, and that's my point in all of this. Again, they're probably looking at other players, and this is just speculation. I just was just alerted to this today, and I was thinking about it because I've talked about that. I think that we missed, believe it or not, what Chris Martin offered last season, along with Malone, along with Aluko. We forget about the hold-up play of Chris Martin, the goals that he scored. We forget all that. And when I heard about this, I'm like, you know what? He could walk right back in and be able to fit into Slavisa's system and be able, I believe, make an impact. And that's why when I heard this, I was like, okay, we got to talk about it because I'd be for it. And as I said in a second, but I want to mention one last time, what I mean is what he offers, not the person, because I will never forget what the person Chris Martin did. And I think that was really just horrible. But if we're just talking about football, what he could offer Fulham Football Club, how he could work in the system, I think he's a perfect fit for what Fulham need right now, which is that type of striker. They're missing it. All right, guys. All right, good stuff. All right, guys, let's get into our preview of this upcoming Barnsley match. And the way I always like to do it, if we can, I think I forgot on the last show to do this, but I'm going to do it on this show, is to go through our stats comparison. And Max, I'm going to start with you. I'll go through the stats in the league in several categories where Fulham and Barnsley are. I get all this information from whoscored.com. See if they tell you anything about these two teams. Let's start with goals. Barnsley are tied for 19th with 24. Fulham are tied at 14th with 27. Shots per game. Barnsley are 9th in the league at 13.4. Fulham are tied at 7th with 13.5. So that's very close. Aerials won. Barnsley are 13th at 21.5. Fulham are dead last at 14.3. Possession. Fulham are currently 2nd in the league with 56%. Barnsley are 16th at 48.2. Passing success. Barnsley are 19th at 67.8. Fulham are still first at 82.6. Crosses per game. Barnsley are tied for 5th with 21. Fulham are tied at 17th with 17. Long balls. Barnsley are 2nd in the league with 84 long balls per game. Fulham are dead last at 59. Let's now look at short passes. Barnsley are 18th with 289 short passes per game. Fulham are 1st in the league at 463. All right, Max. What do these stats tell you about these two teams? Where are the differences? I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I mean, like most matches we play, Fulham are always going to have the better passing stats, the possession stats, the short passes than the opposition. And likewise, in every match we play, we're always going to be worse off in terms of physical duels and headers won, and also the kind of the more direct approach to the match. As you mentioned, Barnsley play more long balls and attempt more crosses than we do. So we can expect them to have a more direct style of play. But what was interesting for me that really took me by surprise is that the Barnsley goals and the number of shots they have per match, which are very, very similar to Fulham's.
Yeah.
And considering Barnsley's position, which is in 20th, which is pretty poor, they've scored a similar amount of goals to us and taken as many amounts of shots as we have, which indicates to me that their defense is probably a lot weaker than ours.
Okay, excellent there, Max. All right, Guy, back over to you. I'm now going to give you some characteristics of Barnsley ahead of this match, also from whoscored.com, and get your thoughts on Barnsley as we get into our preview here. But let's start where both teams are in the league. Fulham are currently 12th with 7 victories, 8 draws, 7 losses. We've scored 27. We've given up 28. We're on a -1 goal differential and are on 29 points. Barnsley have our 20th with 5 victories, 6 draws, 11 losses. They've scored 24. They've given up 34. So they're on a -10 goal differential and are on 21 points. Just a little form update on them. In their last 6 matches, they've lost 5. They've lost 5 in a row, and then they just drew against Brentford. So they've been on a bad run of form, but they did get that draw against Brentford. Here are some characteristics of Barnsley. Guy, there's only one strength listed here, attacking down the wings. Weaknesses, keeping possession of the ball, finishing scoring chances, defending against attacks down the wings. They're very weak at defending against long shots, defending against skillful players. Their style of play, attacking down the right, take long shots, long balls, attempt crosses often, play with width, take a lot of shots, not aggressive, playing in their own half, and they rotate their first 11. WhoScored.com predicts that they will play a 4-4-2, so keep that in mind. What are your thoughts about Barnsley heading into this match?
Immediately, my thoughts are, well, if they're weak at defending attacks down the wings, then we obviously play our game. Get down those wings, get balls into the box. I assume we're going to be playing Johansson in that false nine, so get balls into Johansson. Also, from the defensive point of view, if our fullbacks can keep up with them, shouldn't be an issue in theory, but if our fullbacks can do their job right, you know, do a good job, put in a shift, keep them out, then that's their only real strength gone. Nothing really too special nothing too unexpected, really. I feel like it's a simple thing to say, but this is football we're talking about. Nothing's ever simple.
That's a good point there, Guy. I just want to mention that their leading goal scorer is Tom Bradshaw with 7 goals. So they have a goal scorer that is doing a decent job there. And like I mentioned, they are projecting WhoScored.com a 4-4-2. All right, Max, over to you. Who are your key players for Fulham in this match against Barnsley? Who needs to play well based on maybe what you've watched? I can tell you this, that I see this very similar to some of these matches against Bolton, I hate to say it, against Birmingham City, where they're just going to be packed in and they're going to make it difficult for us to play around the box. They're going to just sit back and they're going to try to stifle us. That's what I saw on video in several matches. They were well organized defensively, and they're going to make it difficult and I believe try to beat us on the counter. So who do you feel needs to have big matches for Fulham to get all 3 points? We don't want to talk about a draw. We want to talk about all 3 points.
Yeah, so for me, I completely agree with what you said about it. It's going to be a similar match to those matches we've played against the bottom teams. And against the bottom teams, you know, Sunderland, Burton, Bolton, Birmingham, Millwall. None of those matches, I think we can all agree, did we play good football? Did we dominate the whole match? Did we win convincingly? So, I mean, we lost to Burton, we drew Bolton, we lost to Sunderland, and we barely beat Birmingham and Millwall by a goal to nil at home in both occasions. So it's clear that this side has a bit of a problem playing against teams that like to sit back, like to stifle us, and are perceived as weaker to us. So that being said, my key player has to be Tom Kearney. This is someone who we haven't really talked about that much in recent weeks, as much of the fan focus has been on the strikers, has been on Font, Johansson, and also kind of the Sessegnon and left-wing, left-back debate. But a player for me who needs to step up is Kearney.
Last season,
by far and away, was our best player. I think 13 goals, 10 assists. He was in double digits for both. That's what I know for sure. It was a superb tally. He truly was our captain, fantastic. And in these type of matches is where he really excelled. When he had time on the ball, he could pick apart these defenses, whether it was his long-range shooting or his really crisp passing that would break the lines. And sadly, we haven't seen that vintage Tom Kearney very much this season. This is a match where he's going to have a lot of time on the ball, I think, where they're going to sit back and say, listen, Fulham, break us down. And the player who's going to be doing all that breaking down, I think, is going to have to be Kearney. And he's my main man for this match.
Okay, excellent. Guy, over to you. Do you agree with Max in regards to Tom Kearney? It's funny. We know that he's still not 100%, but I'm waiting for the day we see 100% Tom Kearney because he can take over a match. So I understand why Max is going with Kearney. Do you agree with him, or is there someone else that you think is key for Fulham to get this victory on Saturday?
Based off of Max's explanation, I completely agree. But the player I had in mind was Johansson. And again, wherever he plays, it's going to have an impact on how he does perform.
Yeah.
But like Kearney, if there's someone who needs to pull their socks up, Johansson is another one of those players.
Agreed.
Like, I've been hearing calls for him to be dropped, and I was calling for him to be dropped off the Sunderland. Again, wherever he plays is going to affect his performance, but he hasn't been putting in the performances that we saw last year. Obviously, not really anyone has put in the performances we saw last year. But even when he was getting on the score sheet against Hull or against Villa or against Nottingham, you know, those kind of performances, even if it's scoring a free kick, you know, he's making an impact on the game. He's made little to no impact on any game though I'm remembering lately.
It's a very good point by both of you. First of all, for Max to bring up Kearney, and now for you to bring up Johansson. He's not been the same player, guy. And I've said this on prior shows. I was warned by some Celtic supporters that his second season with them, he dropped off. I don't know if that's what's going on or if it's injury related, but he's not the same player that we saw last season. He needs to step up. So it's very good by you to mention that. Now, I think you've already talked a little bit about how Fulham need to win this match. For you, is it really taking advantage of them down the wings here?
Well, I said, it's black and white thinking, I guess. But it does sound like one of these games is going to be hard to watch. It's going to be annoying. It's going to frustrate us and pull out our heartstrings. We'll probably give away something or some dodgy thing will happen, and then we'll all get pissed off about it. Like, again, what is it? Max mentioned the Birmingham game. Let's not forget they missed the penalty.
Yep.
Like, yeah. It does sound like one of those games where it's going to be extremely hard for us to break them down. If we're going to win it at all, it won't be an easy one. It will be a nervy 1-0 or 2-1 or something. That's what I called for at Sunderland, a nervy 2-1 win. But we ended up losing. It won't be as simple as just attacking down the wings. It's going to be a hard one. And we need to get the win. Honestly, we keep on dropping points to these teams at the foot of the table. If we are serious about mounting a playoff charge around the turn of the year, like we did last year, we have to start beating the teams below us. We have to start beating the teams in relegation straps. We have to start doing doubles over them. You know, we lost to Burton. I don't even know where they are. Somewhere down the bottom of the league. Yep. We lost to Sunderland. I'm not even going to go there. But you know, we're dropping points against these teams at the bottom of the table. You know, the relegation scrappers, and of course they're going to play like that because they're scrapping. But from just a team point of view, we need to pick up the win, any means necessary. We need to pick up the win.
They're with you.
I don't care if it's a last minute own goal off a dodgy ass deflection. As long as we get 3 points, I'll be happy.
Okay, and I'll hold you to that, guy. You know, when that happens, I'll hold that to you. All right. Right back to you. Let's go to your starting 11, then I'll get Max's starting 11.
All right, Betts in goal. He had a good performance against Sunderland.
I thought he did too.
Not going to fault him for the goal. That was the player, you know. Won't talk about it much more. Betts in goal. Right back, Fredo. Left back, Adoy. Ream and Callas.
I like where you're going.
Standard procedure. Kearney and Hopi has a good day. McDonald and Norwood in the three. Ayite, if he's available.
Okay.
On the left. Ojo on the right, or either wing can interchange. Johansson in the false nine, because I honestly want to see this go somewhere. You know, I would love to see it pay off, and we can all talk about how Slav's a genius. Like, it took time for work. It took time to work, but you know, I want to see it pay off.
Okay,
that's my team.
And I understand. You know, listen, I understand where you're going on this. I just want to mention you did leave out one player. You left out Cess.
Yeah, what am I saying? Cess on. All right, scrap that. Yeah, Cess on one wing, okay. Floyd on another. What am I saying? Yeah.
Okay.
That's yeah. I just
wanted to give you a chance to clarify that a little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you would then sit Ojo. You'd rather play Ayite over Ojo.
just based on, oh no, Ojo's been playing all right. I just want to see how Floyd would work in that formation.
Okay. Okay.
Or maybe even Floyd in a false nine. He can play a striker. So
yep.
You know, we have options. We have options.
Yeah, we do.
It's just Spanners have been thrown in the works with injury. Some changes have been forced. Cabana got injured against the Brummies. Font had to come in. You know, it is what it is. And now we're getting some players back. Lucas Piazon's not far off as well. So we'll get those options sooner or later. And I want to see us mix and match. Hopefully one of these days it'll work and we can stick with that.
Let me ask you, Guy, before I go over to Max and get his starting 11. When Lucas Piazon is back, can he play that role?
He can play as a striker for sure. Whether or not, I haven't seen him in a false nine before. I don't know if he has played there, but I wouldn't put it past him.
Okay. Because I was thinking about, could he potentially play that role if this is the direction that Savic is going? Because it's funny, because I actually think that he's been missed and it's underrated his value last season and the way he started this season. It was basically just a short view of Lucas Piazon, but I think he offers more than most think, and I'm looking forward to having him back in the team. All right, Max.
I see some passion in the team.
True passion. I totally agree with you there. Max, yeah, over to you.
Yeah, just a point about Piazon before I tell my 11.
Okay.
When we did utilize him from the off, when he started in the Leeds away match, when he unfortunately got injured, he was used as the left winger in that front three. But I think he does have that versatility to play anywhere across that front three or even in the midfield three farther back. So that would be a big addition to the squad.
It was a Luko on the other wing.
It was, yeah. And it was Kamara up top. That was way back in August.
August.
So
yeah.
A lot
got
of change,
back to London at 3 in the morning.
Jeez.
Wow. Yeah, that was that Ellen Road must be. That's a major way to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for my starting 11, I agree with Guy for the front eight, I guess it is, for Bendinelli, Reem Callis, Adoy Fredericks, and then Norwood, McDonald, Kearney. And with the front three, I'm going to go with Sesney on the left wing, Aite up top, and Ojo on the right. Mainly based on, I was looking back because I was wondering, all the talk of Chris Martin made me think back to, well, what did we do last season when we didn't have Chris Martin and we played those matches after he got sent off against Norwich?
Right.
And the match that popped to my mind immediately was the Huddersfield away 4-1 victory.
That's right.
I see kind of like a similar situation when we don't have, I'm treating this as, we don't have faith in our central strikers, what formation do we play without them? And in that match, we had a Luko up top, and then Sessegnon on one wing. And a player similar to a Luko who would play up top in that striker position would be Aite.
Aite, right.
So I think Kendrick has shown in the past, yeah, exactly, that he'll like a mobile type of winger who can play in the front three in the center position. So that's what I think we'll go with tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, excellent. All right, guys. Let's go to your prediction. Before I get your prediction, Max, I'm just going to share the Cottage Talk Facebook poll I did. Unfortunately, it doesn't give you three options, only gives you two, so I have to go win and loss. And out of 187 votes, win was at 73% and loss was at 27%. So obviously the Fulham supporters are feeling pretty good about this match. On the Facebook page, what's your prediction?
For me, I've actually have a funny backstory. I've got a lot of feedback from some listeners in my family who said, Max, every single time you've been on the show, you predicted a Fulham win. You need to be more realistic sometimes. But I say to that, you know, I say, you know what, enough of that. I'm sticking with my gut. I'm going to say Fulham 3, Barnsley 1. I'm going to go with the Russ Goldman score.
Wow, I like it. Okay. Yeah. Guy, over to you. Before I get your prediction, I'll just mention the Twitter poll on the Cottage Talk Twitter page. It was out of 113 votes. Win was at 60%, loss was at 15%, and draw was at 25%. Okay. Guy, what is your prediction?
I'm loving the optimism. I'm sharing the optimism.
Okay.
I just think it'll be a totally different result. I think it'll be nervy as hell. I think it'll be like a nervy 2-0. Maybe we'll get one early on and one in the last minute or something like that. Okay. But the rest of the game will be nervy. But 2-0, as long as we get the win. That's, oh my God, is this sirens going off outside? Oh my days, that happened for a while.
It's been a while since we heard those.
Yeah. I just heard them, yeah. Oh my days. No, yeah. 2-0.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Just to be consistent, Max knows this. I'm going with Max. I'm going 3-1 just to be consistent. And I think, you know, going back to what you said, Guy, we desperately need all 3 points. It's probably going to be closer to what you're predicting. It's going to be one of these off someone's head, own goal. You know, it's probably going to be one of those. You're probably right about that. But I'm going to go 3-1 and just hope for the best. And sometimes I'm right. More often than not, I'm wrong, but I'm going to be consistent and go 3-1 to Fulham. All right, guys. Great show. Fantastic show. You guys both were great. Guy, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
So good. Glad to be back again. It's just we tried twice, and it's good to be back. It's good to be back and actually have it working.
And it worked really well. I have to tell you, your connection was fantastic, my friend. Max, have a wonderful time at these matches, and thank you, as always, for joining me. You are in London, so I really hope you enjoy your time, and hopefully you'll be good luck for all 3 points on Saturday.
I'll come say hi.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you so much, Russ. And yeah, the best holiday present would be the 3 points.
Yeah.
Tomorrow afternoon. Cannot wait.
Well, let's hope so, guys. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. For Guy Rolfe and Max Cohen, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.